Okay, good morning. The weekly share from Maseches Chagiga is sponsored by Yitzway CPA, who always tries to make the results of your tax filings a good reason for a Chagiga. And Refuah Shleima for Binyamin Simcha Ben Adina Minya. And the weekly breakfast, as always, is sponsored by Bagel Munch. We will Nishmas Shimon Ben Zev and Fega Bas Chaim. We're going to start, we're doing Chagiga Daf Tes Zayin. We're going to start four lines from the bottom on Tes Vav Amid Beis. The Gemara for a while has been talking about the situation or the incident with Acher and the other Tanaim who also kind of went and explored areas where of Hashkafa or areas of philosophy where they shouldn't have explored and ended up in a bad position. Acher ended up in the worst. And the Gemara most recently has been talking about the fact that they were primed for their reactions, meaning the ones who were more susceptible, such as Acher, to going astray because of what he saw, it's because he kind of was into bad stuff to begin with, whereas the Tanaim who emerged unscathed, as we'll see in a moment, they were primed to be able to react in an appropriate way to what they saw. So the Gemara says on that point, four lines from the bottom, Amru alav al Acher, they said about Acher, Bishasha, even before he was, even before he went off the derech. Bishashay omid mi beis medrash, when he used to get up at the end of learning, at the end of the day in the beis medrash, har beis sifrei minin noshrim mecheko. He would stand up and all these philosophy books, all these, you know, kind of inappropriate books would fall out of his lap. It's like, you know, all the comic books fell out from behind his gemara. And so that was kind of a precursor to the fact that he was a little more susceptible than others to this. And then similarly along these lines, Shal Nimus Hagardi Est Rabbi Meir. So Nimus the weaver asked Rabbi Meir, Kol Amer Dinachis Liora Salik. He said, does all the wool that goes into the pot, the dyeing pot, does it all get properly dyed? As if to say, when Talmidei Chacham are learning Torah, is Torah an effective vaccine against against going wayward? Does the Torah completely infuse itself in people that learn it? So Amar Lai, he responded, Rimei responded, Kol man dahavanaki agav imei salik, kol delo havanaki agav imei lo salik. Any wool that was pure from the shearing of the sheep, meaning from its very beginning, if it's a pure wool, so then it will get fully dyed. But if there are impurities to begin with, then it will not get fully dyed. Same idea here. There are Talmidei Chachamim who are in Torah, who are pure and go into it for the right reasons and approach it purely, so they're going to be fully cleansed by the Torah. But if you're like Acher, who was reading comic books behind his Gemara to begin with, so then you're not so pure and you're not necessarily going to get the full effect of learning Torah. Rabbi Akiva, he was the one who actually emerged unscathed. So why was that? Rabbi Akiva, we said, Allah v'shalom v'yared v'shalom. He went peacefully and he came back peacefully. V'alava kasev omer mashchini acharecha nerutza. The pasuk in Shir HaShirim alludes to that, you know, that he's drawn after it and he will peacefully go. And the Gemara says, V'af Rabbi Akiva bikshu malachi asharis l'dochvo. Even Rabbi Akiva might have been susceptible to this because the Malachi Asharis really tried their hardest to get Rabbi Akiva to follow in this pathway, in the bad path. But Hashem said to the Malachi Asharis, leave Rabbi Akiva alone. He's on a higher level. He is really destined to serve me appropriately. The Gemara then says, my darsh, what did Rabbi Akiva know that the others didn't? What psukim did he darshan that led him to be able to encounter this situation and emerge unscathed? So the Gemara now is going to offer a few possibilities for what pasuk kind of signaled to Rabbi Akiva that there are limits to your learning and that you should not try to intuit and not try to really understand beyond your depth. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The pasuk that Rabbi Akiva, that signaled this to Rabbi Akiva was, V'asa mirvavos kodesh, osu mirvava shelo. The pasuk says, V'asa mirvavos kodesh, which signals that it's os, it's there's something unique about Hashem among his myriads, meaning whatever this means. You can't delve too deep because there's something uniquely unique about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're not ever going to be able to figure out. And so Rabbi Akiva was forewarned based on this pasuk, and that's why he didn't go off the derech. Rabbi Avohu Amar Dagul Miravava, the different pasuk Dagul Miravava, Dugma Hu Miravava Shalom, that Hashem, again, similarly is unique among his myriads. He's an example. He stands out. For Reish Lakish Amar Hashem Tzvakot Shemo Adon Hu B'Tzava Shelo, that Hashem is the master among his myriads. He's not like all the other malachim. He is unique. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abam Rabbi Yochanan, he learns it from the following pasuk, Lo Beruach Hashem, that the Hashem's essence wasn't found in the wind. V'achar Aruach Rash, and then this is with Elio and Avi, right? Mm-hmm. And then after the wind was a noise, V'lo Rash Hashem, Hashem wasn't found in the noise. V'achar Arash Ish, after the noise was fire, V'lo Be'ish Hashem, He wasn't found in the fire. V'achar Ish Kol Demavad Daka, V'nei Hashem Over, and only after that, after all the whirlwind and fire and wind, was there a soft, silent sound, and that's where Hashem was, as if to say, you can't intuit, or you can't figure out, you can't logically derive where Hashem is, you can't delve into that area. And so this is what taught Rabbi Akiva that it was futile to try to do so, and that's how he stayed out of trouble, and he was saved, unlike Elisha ben Avuya. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, Shisha Dvarim Nemru B'Shedim, Shlosha Kamalcha Yasharis v'Shlosha Kibnei Adam. There are six things that are said about Shadim. Three of them are like the Malachim, and three of them are like people. In other words, Shadim are quasi-physical, quasi-spiritual beings, whatever that means. Shlosha Kamalcha Yasharis, what are the three attributes of Shadim that are like Malachim? Yeshlem Knafayim, they have wings, Kamalcha Yasharis. V'tasin me'sofa olam aviad sofo, they flit from one part of the world to the other, from one extreme to the other. Kamalcha Yasharis, just like Malachim. V'yodin masha asir lios Kamalcha Yasharis. And they also know the future, just like Kamalcha Yasharis. The Gemara immediately says, Yodim salkadaitach, do you think they really know the future? It's hard to imagine that even the Kamalcha Yasharis know the future. Rather, el shomim ma'achori ha'paragod Kamalcha Yasharis, rather they can hear when Hashem, so to speak, talks about what's going to happen in the future from behind the curtain, so they're able to overhear it just like the Malachi Asharis, whatever this means. The whole concept of Shadim comes up numerous times in Shas, and it's a difficult concept to understand. Famously, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that Shadim are bacteria. But that's a kind of a minority opinion. Even that's hard. It's hard to understand how you understand this Gemara, saying that Shadim are bacteria, because bacteria don't listen to Hashem and they don't know what the future is. I think the Rambam writes in one place that Shadim that don't really exist, and the Vilna Gaon in his Bir Agra goes, takes a very hard line against the Rambam, saying, how can it possibly be? The Gemara talks all the time about Shadim. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, when he was discussing this, this again I got from a shir from Rabbi Rosner. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that the Gruz critique of the Rambam that Shadim don't exist. So he said Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky suggests that maybe the Rambam himself would admit that Shadim did exist, because the Gemara talks repeatedly about Shadim, and all the Rambam meant to say was that when the kochos of Kedusha are diminished in our time, we don't have Ruach HaKodesh, we don't have Nevi'im, so when the kochos of Kedusha are diminished, so too the kochos of Tumah are also diminished. So nowadays we don't have Nevuah, we don't have these overt spiritual experiences, and so commensurate to that, we don't have Shadim, we don't have kind of evil spirits running around. You deal with Shadim all the time?
I deal with Shadim all the time.
Window Shadim?
That's right.
Window Shadim.
That's right, window Shadim. Uh-huh. Going to close up a window, we want a hole so the Shadim can get through, and this and that.
Uh-huh. Right? That's a variation of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's shot. They're bacteria, or they're window shades, or something like that. Okay. Okay, good. Okay, so now, those were the three instances, or the three ways in which Shadim are like Malachi Asharis. Now, how are they like people? They eat and drink like people. Parim v'ravim k'bnei adam, they reproduce like people. Umesim k'bnei adam, and they die like b'nei adam. This sounds a little more like Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's idea that they're like bacteria, they're living organisms. Okay, shisha dvarim nemru b'bnei adam. There are six attributes that were used to describe people. Shlosh k'malachim asharis, in three instances or three manners we are like malachim. Shlosh k'behema, and in three ways we're like animals. Shlosh k'malachim asharis, yishlem das k'malachim asharis, we have a higher level of understanding of das, of intelligence, just like the malachim asharis. U'malachim become a zakufa, and we stand upright like malachim asharis. And we speak Hebrew, just like the Malchai Asharis do. And on the other hand, we're in three ways we're like animals. We're very physical in that we eat and drink. We reproduce like behemoths. And we produce waste, just like animals. Okay, the Gemara now continues by quoting from the Mishnah. There are four things that you're not supposed to think about, right? And we said, malamala, malamata, malachor, malafnim. So the Gemara says, bishlama, malamala, malamata. Now that we heard the whole thing with the Elisha ben Avuya, we can understand that it's improper to contemplate what's above and what's below existence. Malachor, and also what's beyond existence, like what's behind the existence, behind the universe. So that makes sense. Elifnim, but what's wrong with thinking about what happened chronologically before? What's wrong with thinking about before the history of the universe? Mada hava hava. How can that lead you astray? Because that's just something that happened in the past. It's not something that exists now outside of the limits of time and space. It's just talking about the history of the universe. What's wrong with that? So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, Damri Tarvayu, they answered the following. Mashal. Mashal l'melech basar v'dam. This is, you can answer this by thinking about a king, a human king. Sha'amar l'avadav b'nu li paltirin gedolin ala ashba. So he said to them, please build me a big palace on a former toxic waste site. Right? So halchu bun halchu bunulo, and they went and they built this palace on this former site. Ein ritzon shomelch hazkir shamash, I guess. So the melech doesn't want people to remember. Right, this is where the melech lives now with this beautiful palace. He doesn't want people to reminisce about, oh, remember when that was a garbage dump? Remember when that was not a very nice place? This is a very hard Gemara to understand. I don't know what it's saying exactly, but somehow this story, this mashal, alludes to the fact of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to contemplate what happened before the world was created. Somehow that will conjure up some kind of negative association, negative memory, similar to this mashal. Okay, kol shel achas al kavod kono, rasu lo shel bo'i olam. So whoever is not careful about the honor of his maker, of Hashem, so it's better that he not have been born. So Mahi, what is this talking about when we say that you're not careful or not cognizant of Hashem's honor? Rabbi Abba Amar Zeh Mistakel Bekeshes. This is someone who looks or really stares at a rainbow. Rabbi Yossi Omer Zeh Over Avera B'Seser. Rabbi Yosef says that this is someone who secretly performs an Avera. Mistakel b'keshes d'chsiv k'mara keshes hashir yeh be'anon v'yom ha'geshem k'in mara ha'gina saviv hu mara d'mus k'vod Hashem. So here we have a pasuk that describes the staring at a rainbow as if you're kind of staring at the k'vod Hashem. The Tosfos Rid says that what's similar about a rainbow and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that if you look at a rainbow and try to kind of figure out, okay, that's where the red is, and that's where the blue is, and that's where the green is, it's very fleeting. All the colors kind of merge into another, and it's very hard to really see the boundaries of the colors. They merge in a very fleeting way, and so too is Hashem's kavod, right? It's hard to intuit or understand anything about Hashem, and so a rainbow in some ways is like that, and so kind of staring at a rainbow and trying to distinguish the colors, is in some ways parallel to this idea of trying to understand Hashem. Okay. Rav Yosef Omer, Zeh Over Avera B'Seser. Rav Yosef had said that this was someone who tries to do an Avera in secret. Where do we see that? Because Rabbi Yitzchak, Dam Rabbi Yitzchak, Ko Over Avera B'Seser, Ki Udoche Gragoi Shechina, that someone who tries to do an Avera in secret, it's as if he's kicking the, or it's as if he's pushing off the legs of the Shechina, Shemar Komar Hashem Hashem Kisiv Ariz Radom Ragli. The idea is that Hashem has a presence and is Mashkiach here in the world, and so by you kind of ignoring the fact that Hashem has Hashkacha, Hashem sees what's going on, and try to do an Avera secretly, you are in essence denying the existence of Hashem, denying the presence and the Hashkacha of Hashem. The Gemara immediately asks, is this really true? Ini ve'amar Ravila Zakein, Imroa, this is a famous Gemara, Imroa Adam Shiitzro Miskaber Alav, if a person sees that he just absolutely can't deal with his Yetzer Hara, he knows he's going to sin, so what should he do? Yelech l'makom shein makirano, so he should go to a place where no one knows him, v'yobash shchorim, he should put on black, v'yisatev shchorim, and he should cover himself or wrap himself in black, v'yasem ashlibo chafetz, and there he should do whatever it is that his Yetzer Hara is overpowering him to do, v'yichal shem shemayim b'farhesia, and this is better than being Machal Shem Shemar Beveresi. If you do it secretly in an unknown place where no one knows who you are, no one knows you're Jewish, you're wearing black, that's better than causing a Chil Hashem by doing it in a place where other people see you. So this is a problem, because we just said that by doing a Vera in secret, specifically in secret, that's very bad. You are disregarding the Kavod of Hashem. And here it says that it's better to do the Avera in secret. So the Gemara answers, Lo kasha, had the matzi kayef le yitzrei, had the lo matzi kayef le yitzrei. The answer is that you're not allowed to do Averas in secret, and it is an affront to the Kavod Hashem to do so in secret. That's talking about a situation where you could control yourself. The Gemara that says that you should go to a faraway place and do it when shrouded in black, that's talking about the unusual and very unusual situation where you can't control yourself and you just have no other options, and then the Gemara says, relents and says, okay, if you have no other options, so then go and do that in secret. There's an interesting Tosfos here, the second Tosfos on the Daf, which points out that when this Gemara appears in Kiddushin, Rabbeinu Chananel explains, he says, D'chas v'shalom shayematir l'aso savera. Chas v'shalom, should you think that the Gemara here is telling you that there is a permissible way to do an Avera. Rather, El Kamar Yobash Shchorim V'yelich L'makom Acher, rather what the Gemara is doing is telling you, put on black and go to a different place, D'uvishash Shchorim V'achsanos, because putting on black and being in a place where you're not familiar, Mishabrin Libo, that's going to cause you to kind of reassess, and it's going to be confusing to you, it's going to start to make you a little stressed out, and that's going to cause you to rethink whether you should do this Avera. It's kind of a stalling mechanism. If you're about to do an Avera, you think you can't control yourself, quickly go home, put on black, and then get in your car and go to Newark and, you know, figure out a way to, you know, to distract yourself, is essentially what the Gemara is saying.
That's how Rashi learned it too, right?
What is that?
Rashi learned that too.
Where's you learned that too in that Gemara there?
No,
oh, here?
Yeah.
Is that true? Okay.
He says, ain't I to God's love?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Ain't that the gasa? Love Hashem Yakel Koach Yitzro Vegami Yechta Ina Demnosim Vision. Okay, good. Yeah. So Rashi has a similar idea. So Tosfos quotes it from Rabbeinu Chananel, and Tosfos says that our Gemara seems to be going against that. He says V'sugya D'Shmaisa Eino Mashma Kedvarav, because here it seems the Gemara seems to be saying that the directive of going to a faraway place wearing black and actually doing it applies to a situation where you are absolutely can't control yourself, and that's where you do it. There is a way to bedochak fit that into the Pirush Rabbeinu Chananel, which is to say that, you know, your first step is to not do the Avera and not even put on black. And then if you find yourself absolutely unable to control yourself, so then put on black, and then maybe Rabbeinu Chananel's Eitzah will kick in and you'll be saved. But in any event, as far as our conduct, it's good to kind of think of Rabbeinu Chananel as the guiding principle here, because you shouldn't do Averus, you know. So ideally, hopefully, you put on black, you drive to a faraway place, and then that'll jar you up, and you'll you'll do something positive instead.
Would that be a mekor for taking off your yarmulke if something happened that might cause a kol
hashem? I guess that makes
over for something that you probably shouldn't have done.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Okay. Yeah. I mean that. This gemara I guess would signal something like that. Yeah. Okay. Darash Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, Miturgamanya, Dereish Lakish. So Yehuda, son of Rabbi, Nechemni, who was the Miturgaman of Reish Lakish, he said, Kol Mistaka Begul Dvarim Einav Kos. There are three things that if you look at them, it will cause your eyes to get weak. What are they? Bekeshes, looking at a rainbow. Ubinasi, and I think here this means staring for a long time at a rainbow. To look at a rainbow, there's even a bracha that you say when you see the rainbow, right? Ubinasi, to stare at the nasi.
There's also a bracha for that.
Uve kohanim, and to stare at the kohanim. Let's see. Bekeshes, the chsiv kamara keshes. This is the pasuk we quoted above. Kamara keshes, asher yebanam b'yom hageshem hu marad muskvod Hashem. That a rainbow is similar to the kavod of Hashem, perhaps in the way we just described from the Tosfos Rid. So it's inappropriate to stare at a rainbow. Benasi dechsiv nasatam yodcha alav. Again, talking about the glory of the nasi, that's too much to bear, too much to stare at. And then bekohanim, I think the girsa swaps the words around here. Bekohanim, what are we talking about at kohanim? Bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, at the time of the beis hamikdash, shayu omdim al duchanan umavarchan es Yisrael b'shem ha-mefurash. This was talking about the time when the Kohanim would actually use the Shem HaMeforash in order to bless the people. Rashi points out that at this moment, Shashchina Shora al Kishrei Etzboseim, that by invoking the Shem HaMeforash, this causes the Shechina to actually rest on their fingers, and that's why it's inappropriate to look at their fingers, or at them. Tosvos here, the next Tosvos here, wrestles with, because the Gemara in Megillah apparently looks at this Gemara in Chagiga here as the source for our not looking at the Kohanim Bizman Hazeh. And Tosvos says that doesn't sound right, because the Gemara here is talking about when they used the Shem HaMeforash, when they were in the Beis HaMikdash, not Bigvuin, not talking about outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And Tosfos instead says, no, the reason you're not allowed to look at the Kohanim now when they duchen is because of Hesach Hadas. It's going to cause you to get distracted, but not because there's kind of a Shechina resting on their fingertips. Although, I'm sure when some Kohanim, like the Weiss's duchen, it's as if the Shechina is on their fingertips. Okay, let's see. Darash Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nechemya, back in the Gemara. Darash Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nechemya, Mitzkurmano Darash Lakish. So while we're already quoting that Amora, we quote another drasha for him. May dechsiv al ta'aminu bereya al tiftechu ba'aluf, which means don't depend or don't believe in your friend. Al tiftechu ba'aluf, don't place all your trust in an intimate friend. What does that mean? Im yomar l'cha yetzer hara chato, if the Yetzer Hara tells you, don't worry, you could sin because there's such a thing as tshuva, and tshuva will always save you, so it's always a way out. So don't worry so much, you can do a chait, and then you'll do tshuva, and Hashem will forgive you. Al tamin, don't believe that. Don't go with that advice. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, al tamin bereya vein reya el Yetzer Hara. So how do we know this? Because it says, al taminu bereya, don't trust your friend. So Reya is spelled the same way as Ra, and Ra refers to Yetzer Hara. Shenemar ki Yetzer Leif Adam Ra. V'analofel Kadosh Baruch Hu. And again, this is an allusion to the idea that you might have thought Hashem is going to forgive you if you do this chait because when you do tshuva. So that's Aluf is a allusion to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. How do we know that? Shenemar Aluf Nu Ra Yata. That's a pasuk that says that Hashem is Aluf. Shema Tomar mi may it be, and you might think, says the Gemara, who's gonna catch me? Who's gonna see me doing this avera? I'm doing it secretly. So he says. So the Gemara reassures you. Avane beso v'korus beso shodam heimidimbo. Your walls see, your beams see. In other words, Hashem always sees you even when you're in secret. Shnemar ki even mekir tizak chapayim meitzianena. The walls will see you. V'chachamorim nishmaso shodam ida. Chacham says your own conscience, your own neshama. Is going to give witness. Shnamar mish, what is it? Mishkeves chaycheka shemor pischei picha What is it that this pasuk is referring to that lives in your bosom? That's your neshama. The two malachi asharis that accompany you, they are the ones that are going to give testimony against you. The pasuk implies that there are malachim that accompany you. And finally, what is it? I think there's a girsa change here. What is it, Zion? V'yeshomrim, evarav shal adam me'idin bo. That your own limbs testify, they see what's going on. Shnemar v'atem edai num Hashem anikel. Okay, the point is, don't do averos, even if you think no one's watching you. Okay, now finally, after all that agadita, we're going to actually venture back to topics that are more relevant to the Masechta we're learning, Chagiga. And we're going to talk about specifically whether you do smicha on the animals that you bring for, as karbanos on Yantif. There's an idea generally in Kodshim that you do smicha, you lean heavily. We'll talk on Amud Beis about how much you lean, but the assumption is you lean heavily on the animal as part of the process of bringing the karban. And we're going to talk now about whether that is appropriate on Yantif, whether you do that on the karbanos of Yantif. So we're going to quote a whole bunch of Tanaim. Okay, we start with, who is it, Yosef. Change the gear set to Yosef ben Yoezer Omer, Shalol Smoke. He says, don't do smicha on Yantif, on an animal. Again, smicha, again, is leaning on the animal, as before the Shechita. Immediately before the Shechita. Yosef ben Yochanan Omer Lismoch. Yoshua ben Barachia Omer Shalol Smoke. Nitai Har Bailey Omer Lismoch. So they're switching it every other Tani here, is saying either do the smicha or don't do the smicha. Yehuda ben Tabai Omer Shalol Lismoch. He says don't do it. Shimon ben Shetach Omer Lismoch. He says you do it. Shemaya Omer Lismoch. Do it. Avtalion Omer Shalol Lismoch. Hillel and Menachem lo nechluku. Hillel and Menachem apparently were two Tanaim, early Tanaim, that were typically bar plugs of one another. They would typically argue, and here they didn't disagree. Yatza Menachem Nichnas Shammai. Here you have kind of enter, exit stage left and enter stage right, Shammai. Here he appears now as, for the first time, as the bar plugs of Hillel. And what happened? Shammai Omer Shalol Lismoch, and you have their machlokas Shammai and Hillel. Shammai says, don't do smicha. Hillel Omer Lismoch. Hillel says, you do smicha. And then the Gemara, and then the Mishnah points out, interestingly, Harishonim Hayunasiim. In each of these zugos, in each of these pairs of people arguing against one another, the first one mentioned was the Nasi, Vishniim Lahem Avbezdin, and the second one mentioned is the Avbezdin. The Nasi is the first in command, he's the head, and the Avbezdin was the second in command, he was the second one. Okay. Fascinatingly, this Mishnah kind of doesn't follow the pattern of any other Mishnah. It's weird. Usually you group together all the Man D'Amrim of one way, and then you group together all the Man D'Amrim the other way. So why does this Mishnah go back and forth and back and forth, which listing all these Machloksim? So Tosfos, fascinatingly, the second to last Tosfos, says that the Yerushalmi says that this was the first Machlokas ever. This was the first Machlokas ever. Rishami Omer Barishona lo haya machlokas el asmicha bilvad. This was the only machlokas to begin with. V'yamdu shame v'hilo v'asu v'asu David. You know what that means? Mishirabo tamidei shame v'hilo shoshim shel kol tzarach and rab machlokas b'Yisrael. This is kind of the beginning of our whole culture of machlokas in Torah Shebaal Peh, stems from this. You had this one machlokas. And then the Gemara tells us that once Shammai and Hillel had lots of Talmidim and they didn't necessarily pay as close attention to what their Rabbeim were learning, they didn't tag along to the Rabbeim as much as earlier generations had, that caused there to be Machloksim and there to be different Deos that all stemmed from there. But this was, at one point, historically, this was the only Machlokas that existed back among those Tanaim. So the Tosfos then asks, well, what do you mean? Don't we know about some agadotas that tell us that Shaul and David had machloksim in halacha? And the Tosafot says, no, that was true. It's true there were dissenting views from time to time, but there was always kind of one unified view that prevailed and that then transmitted to the next generation. One side was always the authority. It was only in the time of Shammai and Hillel that things started going haywire, where you had real machloksim that were never really resolved, and you had different kitos, different communities that would follow different practices. That's when it really got started.
But this was at the time of the Sanhedrin.
But this was the time, the Sanhedrin was around.
And weren't they supposed to be, like, definitive? So people didn't necessarily listen to them.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why the Sanhedrin didn't intercede with these... with these machloksim. I'm not sure how that how it worked exactly.
No, there's the two different positions, the Av Beis Din and the Nasi. The Nasi was the head of Sanhedrin, and the Av Beis Din was in charge of...
Yeah, they had different functions. The Nasi was the head of the whole community. He was kind of the leader of the generation.
And the Av Beis Din was the head of the Sanhedrin.
And the Av Beis Din, I guess, was the... Yeah, I mean, the Gemara here is going to say, we're going to learn here, he was the second in command. So, okay. I don't know exactly how, why it is that Shammai and Hillel's machloksim didn't get resolved, and there's a whole history there.
That seems to switch also, right? Like he starts off as the Nasi, and then the second, when Shammai comes, he comes to the second.
Yeah, that's the second Tosos here. It talks about, the last Tosos on the page talks about the fact that he says, Shammai here is mentioned before Hillel, right? Shammai and then Hillel. And then we say that the first guy is always the Nasi and the second one is always the Av Beis Din. And then Tosa says it, but how can that be? Because Hillel was the Nasi and, and Shammai wasn't. But so Tosa says it's just following the...
Menachem.
Yeah, Menachem was there. And so Shammai kind of swapped places. So the Mishnah didn't want to get too complicated by switching everyone's place. So that's that last Tosa was there. Is that right? Is that what the origin of the Machlokas was? Because they weren't in the same Beis Medrash?
They couldn't
resolve it.
Hashing out together. It had to be in two separate places because they were, there was at risk of the Romans finding them and discovering them. So
because they were geographically not together, that's what ultimately led to the first long-standing Machlokas, meaning the fact that they wouldn't really resolve it. Okay. Good. Okay, this is a whole discussion about the... about how these machloksim developed. Okay, good. Fine. So let's see. The Gemara now says, Tana Rabbanan, Shlosha mizugos harishonim shamru shol lismoch, vishnayim mizugos acharim shamru lismoch. So the Gemara has a little slight variation on the last comment of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said more sweepingly that all the first pair, the first ones of each pair were Nesiim, and all the second of each pair was the Av Beis Din. This Bryce is a little more nuanced, and it says Shlosha mizugos harishonim shamru shol lismoch, v'shnayim mizugos acharim shamru lismoch. Three the first three pairs, the first one mentioned is the Nesiim, and the two of the set of the two of the pairs, the second one mentioned is the Av Beis Din. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's what Rabbi Meir says. The Chachamim Omrim. Rechamim says there's an exception to this. Yehuda ben Tabai Av Beis Din, ben Shimon ben Shetach Nasi. So Chachamim say that even though Yehuda ben Tabai is mentioned first, right, and then Shimon ben Shetach, but this was the exception. You have to flip them really. Yehuda ben Tabai was the Av Beis Din. He was the second in command, and Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi. He was the first in command. So the Gemara is going to try to figure out. Now, based on that machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham that we just said, who is the author of the following brisa? Man tana l'hadu tana rabbanon. Who wrote the following? Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai said, Era b'nechama im lo harakti eid zomim l'hotzi migubin shel sedukim shahim omrim eidim zomim neragam ad shiarig hanidon. So there's a machlokas between the tzedukim and the perushim as to when your chayiv is an eid zomim, just to give a little background. An eid zomim is a situation where two eidim come and they testify against a nidon, against a person, and they say this guy killed someone, he's chayiv misa, let's say. And then two new eidim come and they say, these eidim that just tried to convict or that just convicted the Nidon, they imanu hayisem b'makom ploni. We were with them in the classical case that everyone always gives is Chicago. We were with him in Chicago on that day, so they couldn't possibly have witnessed that murder. We were with them in Chicago. And the Torah says, Vasisa lo kasher zon lasos alchivi, you have to kill, because these Edom conspired to kill the Nidon, they get killed themselves. It's a gzeres hakasev, it's an anomaly, because if you just found them guilty of sheker, like you had falsely testified, they wouldn't get kasher zamim. They wouldn't get what they tried to do. But this is a special gzeres hakasev, that in this particular situation where two Edom come and say they were with us in a different place at that time, the Edom that conspired to kill get killed themselves. Or for that matter, if they had conspired to, that guy should owe money, they would have to owe money themselves. Kasher zamim, we do whatever it is that they conspired to do. But the Gemara Makos teaches us that it's only kasher zamim v'lo kasher asa. So you only kill these two Edim if they tried, or if they convicted, they successfully convicted this Nidon, but the Nidon has not yet been killed. But if the Nidon has already been killed, then we don't cause a bloodbath to happen. We spare these two Edom. We get them off the hook. They are not chayav misa like the guy who had already been killed. So it's only kasher zamam v'lo kasher asa. Only what they tried to accomplish to have the guy killed. But if the guy actually got killed upon their testimony, then we relent and we say, okay, these guys are not going to get killed based on that. Kasher zamam v'lo kasher asa. But that's what we say. The tzdukim didn't say that. Tzdukim read the pasuk a little more literally, and they said, no, you kill the guy, you kill these Edom Zomimim, if they were successful in sentencing a guy to death, if they were successful in seeing to it that this Nidon was killed. But if they just tried and then they got caught in the middle, that's not when they get killed. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai was very passionate about this machlokas, and he wanted to demonstrate that the halacha is like us, not like the tzdukim. And so he said, I actually did this. I actually carried out a sentence of Edom Zomimim on an aid where this happened, right? So he says, Erev Nechama, he proclaims, Erev Nechama, I should see the Nechama. As if to say, right, Tosa says it's a lashon of shvua. It's like, he's like, by gosh darn it, I showed that the tzdukim are wrong. In Wilharagti Eid Zomim, if I didn't kill an Eid Zomim, as if to say I killed an Eid Zomim, in order to disprove or to demonstrate something against the Tzdukim, because they said that an Eid Zomim isn't killed unless the Nidon is actually killed. And I say no. You kill the Eid Zomim based on his conspiracy to kill, but not based on his actually success in killing. So, Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach, who was around at the time, said to Rav Yudah ben Tabai, Erev Nechama, he says, I swear, in Wo Shafachta Damna Ki, if you didn't kill innocent blood. He says, you made a big mistake by demonstrating the halacha in this way, and in fact, you killed an innocent person. Sharei Amru Chachamim, because the Chachamim said, Ein Edom Zomim Neragim Ad Sheyazumu Shnehem. The halacha is that Eid Zomim are only killed where the secondary set of witnesses says, Imanu Hayisem B'makom Ploni, where you were both there in Chicago with us, but not where they convict, where they accuse of one person of having not been there. And if you look above, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, when he was telling over his story, he says, I killed an Eid Zomim, singularly. I killed one Eid Zomim. So Shimon ben Shetach said, well, that's very nice, but you completely messed up the halacha, because we never kill one Eid Zomim. You'd only kill two Eid Zomim. And for that matter, Vein Lokin Ad Sheyazumu Shnehem, we don't give Malkus for an Eid Zomim who had conspired to give Malkus to a Nidon until both of them are Eid Zomim. And for that matter, Vein Mishalmin Mamon Ad Sheyazumu Shnehem. Both of them have to be in the parsha of Edom Zomim in order to do this. So Yehuda ben Tabai, who had tried to do the right thing here and to demonstrate against the tzdukim, realized immediately that he had made a terrible, terrible mistake. He killed a person improperly, which is a big, big mistake. So Miyad Kibel Lav Yehuda ben Tabai She'eno Mora Halacha Elo Bifnei Shimon Ben Shetach. So he immediately accepted upon himself a new practice. He says, okay, from now on, I am not ever going to Paskin Halacha unless Shimon ben Shetach is there, because he clearly knows the Halacha better than me. I'm going to I'm going to always hold off on Paskin unless Shimon ben Shetach is there. And then the Gemara continues and says, Kol Yomav Shah Yehuda ben Tabai, for the rest of his life, he felt so bad about this incident that he had killed this person improperly. He would always visit the grave of that person who he had killed improperly, via kolo nishma, and you always heard voices coming from that grave. And the people always thought that it was actually the voice of this killed person who was yelling from his grave about this terrible injustice that had been done to him. Who amar lahem koli who? But Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai reassured the people and he said, no, it's not the guy in the grave screaming, it's me. I'm crying because I feel so terrible about this terrible incident. I'm the one who's crying. Teidu, and I can prove to you that it's me, shalomachar hu meis vein kolo nishma. And I can prove to you that it's me because tomorrow or one day I'm going to die and you're going to stop hearing the crying from the grave and you'll know that it was me the whole time and not the meis in the kever. So I think, and then what happened is it happened. He died, and then the voice stopped. And so they saw that that it wasn't the mace, that it there wasn't the person in the grave that was crying. It was really just Yehuda ben Tabai. But Amar Leih Rav Acha Bar Derava or Rav Ashi, so he pointed out to Rav Ashi, Rav Acha Bar Derava pointed out to Rav Ashi, V'dilma piusei paisei ubedinei tavei. Don't be so sure that it wasn't the Harug, that it wasn't the person in the grave that was crying. Don't be so sure that it was actually Yehuda ben Tabai that was crying, just because the crying stopped when Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai died. Because maybe what happened was Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai died, and then he went up to Shemayim, and then he was able to console the person who was killed. Or maybe he got punished for it, and then the person who was killed stopped yelling out. Maybe there was something kind of extra, extra spiritual happening there that caused the kol to stop after the death of Yehuda ben Tabai. But that's not to say that that kol all along wasn't the kol of the nidon. Okay, but anyway, the whole point of that story was to prove which way or to try to figure out which way we're going in that machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, as to whether Yehuda ben Tabai was the Avbezdin and Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi, or vice versa. So the Gemara says, money. Who is this story, this Braisa that we just quoted, this whole story with him killing this person improperly, who is that going like? Money ha, who is that going like? Iamris Bishlama, Rabbi Meir, Yomer Shuman Shedach Avbezdin, Yehuda ben Tabai Nasi. If you hold that it's like Rabbi Meir, who held that Shuman Shedach is the Avbezdin, again, that's the second in command, and Yehuda ben Tabai is the Nasi, is the first in command. So then we understand why at the beginning of the story, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai paskined, even though Shimon ben Shetach was present. Hainu dekamori halacha bifnei Shimon ben Shetach. We understand the story. It makes sense. At the beginning of the story, Yehuda ben Tabai, who was the Nasi, he paskined halacha, even though Shimon ben Shetach was present, because Shimon ben Shetach was only the Av Bezdin. And then when he saw that he had led, that his paskining had led to such a catastrophe, he resolved that he would never paskin again without consulting Shimon ben Shetach, That makes sense. Eliam Ris Rabbanan. But if you say that the halacha is like the Rabbanan, the Amri Yehuda ben Tabai Avbezdin, that Yehuda ben Tabai was the second in command, Shimon ben Shetach Nasi, and Shimon ben Shetach was the first in command, so then the story doesn't make sense from beginning, because how could Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai have even in the first instance paskined when Shimon ben Shetach was alive? Avbezdin b'fnei Nasi mimora halacha. Could the Avbezdin have ever paskined halacha like the in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach? So the Gemara answers, no, it's not a proof necessarily. Lo, my kibe alav dekamra litzarufe. Really, the Gemara says that you can say that even if Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai was the Avbezdin, was the second in command, maybe he paskined in the first instance because Shimon ben Shetach wasn't present, wasn't there. And now that he realized he made such a terrible mistake, he resolved that in the future, I'm only going to paskin in tandem with Rav Shimon ben Shetach, in consultation with Shimon ben Shetach. I'm never going to paskin alone when he's not present. You don't have to say, right, it's not a kasha, how he was able to paskin in the beginning during Shimon ben Shetach's reign as a nasi, because Shimon ben Shetach was, maybe he was out of town that day. And that's why he paskined. And then his resolution after the catastrophe, after realizing that things had gone so terribly, was that I'm never going to paskin again without Shimon ben Shetach there or without consulting with Shimon ben Shetach. Right? Dafu itzrufin el mitzarfina, mitzarifna, I'm not ever going to do it without consulting him. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Yatza Menachem v'nichnas Shammai. So Menachem, the Tana, left the stage, and Shammai entered, and he became the person who we always associate as the Arpuksa of Hillel. So the Gemara says, La'ichan Yatza, where did Menachem go? Abai Yomer Yatza L'tar B'sra. He ended up going off to some bad situation. He ended up going off the Derech. Rav Amar Yatza L'avodas HaMelech. And Rav says, no, he just went to work for the king. Not anything so scandalous. Tayinami Hachi Yatza Menachem L'avodas HaMelech. We have a brace that says he went off to work for the king. V'yatzu imo shmonim zugos talmidim luvushin seirukin, and at the same time, 80 pairs of talmidim of Menachem also went out wearing kind of royal clothing, silk robes. Amar Rav Shimon bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, liolam al teishvus kalabeinecha. Okay, we've been talking about, the Mishnah talked about the halacha of smicha, of leaning on the animal as part of the avoda. So, And some of the Tanaim said there that you shouldn't do this on Yontif. So why would you not do smicha on Yontif? And the answer is because it's a extension of the gzeira drabanan of not riding on an animal. There's a of not riding an animal on Shabbos and Yontif. There's a gzeira drabanan of not riding an animal on Shabbos and Yontif. A few reasons are given why not. One of them is you're going to rip off a branch to hit it, right? But in any event, there's a machok. There's a gzeira drabanan of not riding an animal of Yontif. And the idea is that smicha, pushing on the animal, is considered like mishtamshus bebehema, is leaning on the animal in an improper way that violates that takana drabanan of not riding on an animal. And so the fact that these tanaim say that you shouldn't do smicha on yantif, even in the context of the avoda, teaches us that you got to take mitzvahs drabanan very seriously, because here, this mitzvah drabanan actually overrode a niug of kachim in the base of Mikdash. Amar Rav Shimon bar Abba, Amar Yochanan, liolam al teishvus kalo beinecha. Don't ever think of a shvus is usually the term we ascribe to a din drabanan on Shabbos, to an iser malacha drabanan on Shabbos. So you should never kind of downplay and think of a shvus as a small thing. Shari smicha ina olamishum shvus. Because the only problem with smicha would be because of this gezeira drabanan of hishtamshus behema, v'nechluku ba gadoi ador. And we see that there are tanaim who said that you should actually not do shvus in the base of Mikdash. So the Gemara says, pshita, obviously. Of course you should take all drabanan seriously. You need this mission to teach you that lesson. So the Gemara answers, shvus mitzvah strichalei. You might have thought that since this shvus is for a mitzvah, then maybe you should be able to violate it. And so the fact that we seem to say that you should not violate the shvus even for a mitzvah is teaching you that you should take shvusim seriously. So we're saying, as nahanami pshita. Obviously, if the rabbanan outlawed something, so then it outlawed it. Why would you think that the fact that it's a mitzvah would override that? That also doesn't make sense. So the Gemara answers, and it comes on, it's going to modify its approach here slightly, that it's lafuke miman damer besmicha gufa pligi, kamashmon b'shvusu de pligi. What Rav Yochanan is really saying here is that you might have thought that the machlokas tanaim in our Mishnah is fundamentally a machlokas about whether you should do smicha for a nedava, a chovas nedava. Meaning we know, the Pasuk says that you do smicha for, for an adava. If you bring an optional karban, so that's where the Pasuk says you do smicha. But the karbanos that you bring on Yontif are not optional karbanos. They are chovos. They are actually mandatory karbanos. So you might have thought that the machlokas in the Mishnah is not talking about whether the drabanan aspect overrides anything, but it's whether fundamentally you do smicha for a chovas nedava. You might have thought that. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan and says, no, al teishvus kal b'nechashrei smicha en ol mishum shvus v'nechlu b'gadodor. It says that really what the subject matter of the machlokas in our Mishnah is whether smicha violates that mitzvah, that shvus drabanan. But everyone agrees that fundamentally you should have done smicha by a chovas nedava. Okay. Amar of Ami. So now that we've concluded that the issue here is hishtamshus bebema, that the reason why these Tanaim were grappling with whether you should be able to do smicha on the carbon was because of this iser drabanan. Once we've concluded that, some says Amar Abichama, Amar Rami Barchama, Shma Mina, we see from this, smicha b'chol kocho ba'inan. This demonstrates to us that smicha, you can't just rest your hand on the animal, because that wouldn't have been a problem of hishtamshus bebema. The only reason it's a problem for some of hishtamshus bebema is because you're really putting your whole weight on the animal as if you're riding it. So this demonstrates to us that smicha, generally speaking, requires the full weight of the person. You have to really push down on the animal. Because if you weren't required in the avoda to do the full pressing, to put all your weight on the animal, so then what's the big deal? You could have just put your rest of your hand on the animal. That wouldn't have been a problem of malacha. Okay, now we're going to ask a question on that with a brace that's going to go on for a few lines before you get back to the question. So hold that thought. Meisvei, Dabro b'nei Yisrael v'samach, b'nei Yisrael somchim v'im b'nos Yisrael somchos. From the Pasuk, we have a drasha that only males do smicha, not females. Women don't do smicha. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim b'nos Yisrael somchos rishos. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon says women may optionally do smicha. Omer Rabbi Yosef, Sachli Abelazar Pamachas. Sachli Abelazar, Abelazar told me, Pamachas hayuanu egel shel zivche shlamim. We once had this type of cow, we were bringing it for shlamim. Ve'vianuhu ezras nashim. And we actually brought it to the ezras nashim. V'samchu alav nashim. And the nashim, the women, did smicha. Lo mipnei shesmicha b'nashim. Not because women do smicha, or not because women should do smicha min haTorah, rather el kedei lasas nachas ruach hanashim, but in order to appease them, to make them feel a little better, to make them feel like they were participating, that's why we allowed the women to do smicha. V'yisal kadaitach smicha b'chol kocho ba'inan. And if you held that smicha, if you held that smicha should be done with full force, so the mishum nachas ruach, the nashim avdina and avoda bekadshim, would we allow you to actually put your full force on an animal, which would be improper ordinarily, because you're not supposed to use an animal that's hektish, right? So it would be improper to put your full force on the animal. It would only be proper if you're doing it as part of the avoda. And then it's only proper if you are actually mitzuvah in it. But it's hard to imagine, he says, that if the only reason we were allowing these women to do smicha was for nachas ruach, to kind of appease them and let them feel like they're cooperating, that we would actually allow them to do that in violation of the prohibition generally of pushing on an animal that's hektish. So rather, he concluded from there, it must be that you don't need to do smicha b'chol kocho, and then therefore when we allowed the women to do it, they just did it lightly. They did, then you know, then it wasn't violative of any other problem in Hilchos Kadshim, and then it was okay for the woman just to do it mishum nachas ruach. So the retorts to that, no, maybe you really do need full force on the animal. But in the case of the women doing it, we just told them, you women do it, but do it gently. We kind of instructed them not to press too hard. Gemara answers, it says, Ihachi lo mipnei shesmicha b'nashim teipuklei deina smicha klal. Right? Meaning, once we're saying that you don't really press down, then connecting this practice to the analyst, to the analysis of whether women do smicha is faulty. Because you don't need to conclude that it's only for nachas ruach. You could just say that it's because this isn't really smicha. Right? Once you're already saying... Once you're already saying that you're not doing real smicha, we're just doing kind of a symbolic smicha, so then you don't really need to get into the whole analysis of do women do smicha? Do women not do smicha? Just go with that, right? So Amar of Ami Chada veod kamar Chada d'lesa l'smicha klal veod k'dei l'asas nachas ruach l'nashim. So he says that once we already came to this conclusion that this smicha that the women do is not real smicha, so then it's true. That's a good enough reason why it should not be prohibited in general to have allowed them to do smicha. And then we're just throwing in addition to that, that the reason we allowed this in general was in order for nachas to allow nachas ruach l'nashim. Okay. So Amar Rav Papa, Shema Mina, so Rav Papa says, from this we see that studim asurin. From this we see that even... when we talk about Chazal's prohibition of riding an animal on Shabbos, so it's not only riding the animal on the whole, getting on top of the animal, but even kind of hanging on the side of the animal or pushing down on the head of the animal is usur. Because our whole discussion about smicha seems to be based on the prohibition of smicha be behema. And the smicha wasn't done on the back of the animal where you're normally riding. The smicha was done on the head of the animal. And so if we see from this that the initial prohibition of riding on an animal, and the idea of the initial prohibition of ishtamshus b'behema applies not only to the back of the animal, to riding it proper, but even to like hanging onto its head or even pushing a little on the side. This is related to the isser drabanan of climbing a tree. Right? These two prohibitions are quoted together in Masechta Shabbos. You're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos, we're afraid you're going to break a branch, right? So it's not only climbing the tree proper that's prohibited, but even studim, even if you have a nail or a peg in the tree, you're not allowed to hang on that. The issue that the Gemara then deals with is, what about studate studim? What if you have a nail in the tree and then something hanging on the nail? That's the whole discussion about hammocks on Shabbos, because the hammock is not necessarily, if the hammock was tied directly to the tree, then it's a real problem of studim. You're not allowed to be on the hammock. But if the hammock is tied to something that's attached to the trees, then it might be mutter to sit in a hammock on Shabbos. But the point here is that we see here that at least that initial, that direct secondary leaning on the animal is prohibited, because our whole discussion here about smicha is predicated on the idea that pushing on the animal's head is asur, even though the head is not the normal part of the animal that you'd ride on. So we see from here, it says, Rapapa, Shmaminat studim asurim, you're not allowed to push down on the head. Because if in fact doing so on the side would be okay, so then just say, do the smicha kind of on the animal's ear, on the side of the animal. The fact that you can't do smicha at all shows that studim asurim, even hanging on the side of the animal, is improper. This proves that studim is asurim. And then the Gemara immediately retorts and says, Ravashi Yomar Afilu Temut Studim Mutar. Now you could even say that as a matter of Hilchos Shabbos, Studim would be Mutar, called the Bahade Gaba Ki Gaba Dami. But if we're talking about leaning on the head, that's kind of an extension of the back. Because, it's one thing to lean on the animal's, tail. Or it's one thing to lean on the animal's ear. But smicha is leaning on the animal's head, which is basically, the same plane as the animal's back. And so that would be violative of the ikar isser of smicha bebehem. Of shamshus bebehem.
You can't make nice.
You can't make